Welcome, and thanks for listening to the Missouri Review Sound Booth podcast. We're broadcasting from the University of Missouri campus in Columbia, Missouri, home of the Missouri Review, the quarterly that brings you the best contemporary literature in fiction, nonfiction, and poetry. Every week, we'll be featuring a wide range of readings and interviews with writers, editors, and agents. This week on the podcast, as part of our series of podcasts about the Citizen Jane Film Festival, we interview Sharon Shattuck. The Citizen Jane Film Festival celebrates independent film by independent women and takes place in Columbia, Missouri, every fall. Sharon Shattuck is a filmmaker whose first feature, From This Day Forward, is currently touring film festivals all over the world. From This Day Forward is a documentary that tells the story of Shattuck's transgender father, Trisha, and her mother, Marcia, who have been married for over 30 years. In addition, Shattuck is the co-creator of the New York Times Op-Doc series Animated Life, which animates historical moments of scientific discovery, and is a contributing blogger for The Huffington Post and The Advocate. So we have Sharon with us today, and we're going to start by having her just tell us a little bit about her film, From This Day Forward. So Sharon, can you just talk to us about what it's about, tell us a little bit about the title and where that comes from?
Yeah, so From This Day Forward is a personal documentary about my family. The story is essentially that my dad is transgender and came out to my family when I was about 8 years old and my sister was about 5 years old. And despite this fact, my parents managed to stay together. And so the title is, it's actually from traditional wedding vows. It means, you know, these people are staying together from this day forward. They made a choice, and that's what they're going to do. And the film is really, it's a love story about their relationship, and it sort of weaves in with my own relationship with my now husband. I was making the film as I got engaged, and I was kind of wondering, like, what does it mean to be in a marriage that's, you know, over 30 years old, and that, you know, you've, like, worked really hard to stay with somebody and seen these changes happen?
You know, one thing I was thinking about while watching the documentary was how you're making this film about your family. You yourself are even in it, like you say, like your wedding is an important part of the movie. And what was that like, having your subjects be so close to you, yet trying to present this kind of objectivity, even about yourself and your own life? Like, how did you negotiate that?
I mean, it was really difficult. It wasn't like, when I first set out to make the film, I thought that I was going to make a film about other people's LGBT families. You know, wow. I was like, oh, you know, I'll disclose my own history, but I'm, you know, that just to get people to trust me, but the film won't be about me. And I started to do that, and I was interviewing people. I went around the country and started to talk to different families, and I was bringing the footage back and also filming a little bit with my family for, like, the 8-minute scene that I thought we might have in the movie. And I just realized that my dad is really, like, fun and exciting and entertaining on camera, and my parents were kind of, like, indulging my filming, and I realized that they might actually let me make a movie about them. So that's kind of where, you know, where this idea started. But it wasn't easy. Like, the whole time I was filming, I was just sort of filming everything that was happening in my family, like, what I know of as normal. And afterwards, while we were starting to put together the footage, my producer Martha Shane, who directed After Tiller, just won an Emmy for it this year, and then my editor Freddie Shanahan, we sat down together and did all of the kind of story discussions as a group, because it was very hard for me to like be objective and to kind of step back and be like, oh yeah, yeah, I guess we don't need that, you know, or like, oh no, that's really important. Like, there were a lot of times where I was kind of trying to protect my family because they're so close to me and I didn't want something to be in the movie. And then they would be like, I think this is really important to include. One example is, like, I asked my dad if my parents still are intimate. Mm-hmm. And it always gets a laugh in the movie. Mm-hmm. And they were absolutely right to argue that we should keep that in, because I felt uncomfortable. I thought, oh, this is a rude question to ask a transgender person. And it is, you know. So it was really hard to see that that was important. And, you know, I did, obviously, I came around and I saw their point. So I think there's a mix of, like, trusting the people who work with you and then also being open to a movie that's a little different than what you expected or imagined.
I think that was a really, like, as you said, a funny moment in the film. And I think, you know, we all think, well, who wants to know about their parents' sex life? Like, no. So you were talking about story and talking about story for making a documentary. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you shape that raw material? Because I think when most of us think of documentaries, we're like, okay, you know, this is what happened. This is everything that happened. Like, how do you put a narrative arc into that?
Okay, so really, like, documentaries start by just filming. And so I started filming in 2011, and I would just come home and have my camera, and I would just film my parents doing stuff. And I knew when I started that I wanted it to be a film about their love story and their relationship. So I was sort of, you know, I was trying to film them doing things together, and that's, like, where the movie started. And then things sort of started happening while I was filming. They, you know, they would do something funny that I didn't expect, or something, you know, would happen. And so I was there capturing it. And then I started to do interviews with them and go and ask them about the past, because a lot of our story happens in the past. Like Trisha's transition to female started when I was, you know, 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't know if it's ever really ended. But a lot of it happened in the past. And so I wanted to ask them about that. And I asked my dad about her paintings. She's a really prolific oil painter. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to know, like, how those tie into her life and her psyche. And after collecting all of this footage, then you're like, okay, I'm going to start, you know, get my archival. I've got all my, like, old photos of our family. I've got photos of Trisha's paintings. And then you start to think about, like, what of this is important for the story I want to tell? Mm-hmm. And to do that, we usually take note cards or, like, post-its, and we kind of have the main scenes that we think might be part of a movie, and we put those out on a board. And that's, like, me and my editor, Freddie, doing that together. Freddie watches through everything that I shoot because he's a saint. And then he tells me what he thinks is really interesting. I counter. I say, well, I think this is really important to include. Then we take those notes and we put them on the board. And then from there, he starts to assemble the scenes. And then sometimes, well, a lot of the time, you move those around. So it's really, like, it becomes kind of a shuffling, you know, that puzzle where you have, like, the little squares and you have to, like, move them around.
Yeah.
Like, they're all still on the board, but, like, they can all go in different places. It's like, we have all these scenes. We know that they're all important. And you have to shuffle them around until you find the right order. And it's tedious. It takes a long time. And we submitted a poor cut to Sundance and to South by Southwest because we thought we had solved the puzzle. Hmm. But then we took 2 weeks off. We realized that the puzzle, like, still needed a lot of work. And so we reshuffled that. And luckily that cut was accepted into Full Frame Documentary Film Festival, which was just a really cool premiere in April. So we're very lucky that, like, we solved the puzzle.
So one question that occurs for me is, I mean, I agree with you that the heart of the documentary is the relationship between your parents and how that influences your own relationship. At what point did you realize that this was the story? Like, this was the story out of all the footage?
I knew from the beginning that I wanted to tell a love story about my parents. At the beginning, I kind of thought eventually I would get engaged, but I didn't know when. And then it sort of came together even before my husband was going to propose to me. I was like, I think this is going to have to be in the movie. And so when he proposed, I was like, yes, like, for many reasons, but one of them being that I knew that our story was going to be sort of an echo of my parents. And I think getting, like, being with somebody is a universal human experience, and trying to stay with somebody through massive changes is something that we all go through, like, whether or not our partners are transgender. So yeah, I knew probably about halfway through the process that this was going to be a part of the story.
And I'm thinking about your wedding and the movie and how that's, like, a pivotal point, and thinking about I mean, was that strange at all to have, like, your wedding be part of then, I mean, your work, your project? I mean, it's still about you, obviously, but you're still kind of making yourself art on that very personal day. So, I mean, what was that like that day, having your wedding be in there?
I mean, it was really, really difficult. Mm-hmm. Trying to direct while I was getting married was very hard. And I created a shot list a couple days before, and I had some friends of mine shoot, and then I hired a person to help shoot the wedding. And it was just, I mean, it was, I told everybody that the day of, I was just getting married, and I didn't want to be directing. And so that helped a little bit, but I was really aware of, like, what everybody was shooting, and just hoping to God that they shot what I wanted them to shoot in the way that I was hoping that they could shoot it. Usually I do my own shooting, so it was a little bit scary to give up that control on that day. As a filmmaker and as a documentarian, I ask a lot of my subjects, and so for me it felt really good to, like, almost sacrifice my, or, like, put my own personal life on display in a way that I ask so many other people to do. So it felt kind of nice, you know. It was like the ultimate sacrifice for my art.
Yeah. I guess related to, you know, your family, yourself being the subject of this film, was there anything you felt that you couldn't ask your parents? Anything that you felt that you just weren't gonna cover?
I didn't want to really get into their sex life, you know, because they're my parents. I really didn't want to, like, I just didn't want it to get weird. So, like, I asked them, I grazed the surface with that question, but I didn't go in deeper than that, because I was just like, I cannot, like, I don't want to open this can of worms. So, you know, and I don't regret it, but it's definitely something that I'm aware of, like, as a filmmaker. And I don't know, like, my sister has had some issues that she struggled with, kind of more like medical, like, depression issues, and I just felt like it wasn't fair for me to put all of those things on display. So I sort of hint at that in the film, but I'm not explicit about, like, oh, Laura had this, you know, blah, these different problems, because I don't think that was really fair, because she didn't talk about that stuff in the interview.
To go back to something you were talking about in terms of your father's paintings, which are gorgeous, they are so beautiful. So how did you decide to have his paintings be one of the through lines for the movies? I mean, the credits start over his paintings, and she keeps referring back to the paintings as showing how she was feeling at certain points. So how did that become, like, a centerpiece for the movie?
Yeah, I always knew that Trisha's paintings would be somehow important, just because they're just beautiful. And I didn't want to just do a transition story, because I think, you know, for a long time with gay and lesbian movies, the theme was just coming of age over and over again. And you'd see all these movies coming of age, like some young boy goes to the city and comes of age. And now I think you see that in transgender movies or transgender stories, where it's just the transition, like, over and over again. And I didn't want to just be like, this is a person who's transitioning. Like, no, Trisha is an artist, a parent, and, like, a member of a family. And so I wanted to do something a little bit bigger than just, like, a transition. And obviously the transition is important for the context of the story, so it's included, but it's not what the movie's about, in my opinion. And so I knew that the art would be important, and but I really didn't realize until I started talking to Trisha in the interviews that, like, I didn't know that the clown painting was a self-portrait of Trisha. And I mean, there's, like, so much emotion wrapped up in those paintings, and just, it's almost like a pictograph of her history. And that's just amazing, you know. Like, of course artists put themselves into their work, but this is literally, like, you can read this diary if you can understand and decipher it. And so when I realized that, it was just a matter of, like, which paintings are important. And obviously, you know, Where the Marsh Meets the Lake is a very important painting, because it's a landscape, but it's a landscape that symbolizes Trisha and Marsha meeting and working together to make a relationship work. So I knew that that was going to be probably the most central painting to the story. Yeah, it was just kind of like a wonderful scavenger hunt, or like an archaeological dig in a way, where I was like uncovering all this information that I really didn't know before. And this was very exciting to be able to bring those paintings into the movie.
I was thinking about how here you are, an artist in your own right, capturing your father's art with these paintings. So it all got very meta in terms of I am capturing what my father captures. So in terms of this being a film about your father as a full person, but also somebody who's transitioning, I think something that makes your film very different from, you know, television shows like Transparent or just like hearing about Caitlyn Jenner is how your father still seems to be pretty fluid in her gender identity. So she prefers the feminine pronoun, but it'll vary, you know, day by day, how she dresses in terms of more masculine, more feminine. In the movie, at one point, she says, "The way I behave is kind of unpredictable. I shift back and forth a lot between masculine and feminine." So I'm wondering, because it seems more liminal, more fluid somehow, and I like how that portrait is different than a lot of the other portraits that we see. But I'm wondering, does that ever get confusing for you, for Trisha, for your mother?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if Trisha was like in isolation, she would absolutely wear dresses every day. And I don't know if she would wear makeup, honestly. Actually, I don't even know if that's true, because Trisha likes to paint and she likes to ride horses. And those are both things that you don't necessarily want to have like a flowy dress when you're doing. And a lot of the time, Trisha kind of wears like Carhartts, you know, kind of work clothes where she can like wipe dirt off and stuff and not worry about it. I think that her lifestyle makes it so that she can't dress very feminine all the time, although maybe she likes, you know, she would rather do that. But, you know, what's complicated in our situation is that my parents are still married and my mom isn't attracted to women. She's straight. So that's a huge elephant in the room for my parents. And how they've managed to negotiate that is that most of the time Trisha is more gender neutral, I'd say. Even though she's a woman, she considers herself a woman all the time, you know, so the gender, like her gender doesn't change, but the way she kind of expresses or, you know, how she dresses is a little bit more gender neutral. And I mean, I think about that a lot just for me, like where, how I want to present on any given day. And I think about it a lot with like having my movie out and screening at, you know, festivals and stuff. It's like, do I want to wear a dress today? Uh-huh. Do I want to be feminine, or do I want to be kind of a strong woman and wear my jeans? And, you know, so it's something that I think about all the time. And I know like pretty much every woman thinks about that every day, because we have a choice of what we want to wear. And Trisha, I think her choice is out of consideration for Marcia and out of this choice to stay with the person that she loves. Yeah, that's, I don't know. I think the difference between, like, one of the main differences between like Transparent and Caitlyn Jenner and our story is that my parents are still together. So there's just a whole other level of like complication. But also, I don't know, I think it's a triumphant thing. It's amazing that they stayed together, and I know a lot of people don't.
What do you think about the TV show Transparent, or about how Caitlyn Jenner has been, you know, presenting herself and her transition and like the media's reaction?
I mean, I love Transparent.
Me too.
I really do.
Loved it.
I think it's so cool. And I've emailed a little bit with Jill Soloway.
Oh, jealous.
And she's the best. So I'm a total fangirl. I think it's really exciting to have a show like Transparent. And it's not exactly my story, but there are so many parallels. And I see so much of my dad in Maura, Jeffrey Tambor's character. Just the sort of sadness and the wistfulness and the goofiness. And I don't know. I think it's been really empowering to see a family that's sort of like mine on TV. I never saw that when I was growing up. I mean, it was just like, I felt like such a black sheep at school in my hometown. I mean, it was really hard. And so it's nice to see that that's out there now. And I think, you know, Caitlyn Jenner is doing a lot. Like, she's bringing the notion of being transgender to a lot of people who have never thought about it before. And so I think that's like where she's really excelling. Like, she's obviously got a lot more money than most transgender people, and so in that way she's not really that relatable, but she is at least bringing a platform to a lot of people who haven't otherwise been talked about. So I think it's good. And it's kind of like raising the level of understanding. Thank God in my movie, we don't have to be like, this is what it means to be transgender, and kind of doing the transgender 101 discussion. We can jump in at a little bit of a higher level and go a little deeper, I think.
You talk in your movie about how kids of LGBT parents also have to come out. And that's something I had never thought about. I thought it was so interesting and seemed so true. So can you tell me a little bit about that? Like, when you decided to come out of your own accord?
Yeah, when I was younger, when I was like dependent on my parents, I had no control over when to tell my friends about my dad, because I couldn't, you know, Trish was driving us around to school and to, you know, being a chaperone at our dances, and everybody in town knew already about Trisha, even though I was kind of in denial about that at the time. And it was interesting because when I went to college, I was far away from my family for the first time, and nobody knew who my parents were. And it was really interesting. I felt like, I kind of felt like a anonymous, you know, superhero or something. Like, I had this secret, and it could change the way people think about me, and it could also change the way they think about LGBT people, potentially. And so for a while, I didn't talk about it, and I kind of enjoyed that anonymity. I enjoyed that, and then at some point, I think I made a lot of friends, you know, LGBT friends, and mostly LGB, I guess, at the time, because there aren't that many transgender people out there. But I had a lot of friends on campus, and I felt like disclosing could bring us closer together and help them understand me a little bit better. And so I told them, and their response was, oh, cool. You know, and had a lot of questions, but they were completely like accepting, and it just felt really nice, you know? And so I started to tell more people in my circle, and it took a long time. It took years and years. But eventually I published a little piece on the New York Times on the op-doc section about my dad's name change. And that was really when, like, I mean, that spread across in through my hometown. People would come up to Trisha and be like, hey, Trish, I saw you on the front page of the New York Times. And it was cool because I think everybody was a little bit like hesitant and like, what's going to happen out of this? And people from my hometown were sharing it and liking it on Facebook, and Trisha and Marcia got a really nice response from people around town. And so it was kind of like, oh, wow, okay. It's a different world now, you know?
Mm-hmm. When you talk to your dad, do you call her dad or Trisha, or do you go in between the two?
When I'm addressing Trisha, I say dad. Mm-hmm. I'll be like, hey, dad, how's it going? Or, you know, talking on the phone or whatever. When I'm talking about Trisha, I usually say Trisha, mm-hmm. just because it's a little easier. Like, most people don't say she when they say dad. It's just confusing, and I get it. And so I usually just say Trisha and she. And if people are like, oh, who's that? Oh, my parent. You know, sometimes I'll say, I don't know. I mean, it just depends on the person. Like, I was at the airport the other day with Trish, and she came into my terminal by accident, but then she had to go out the security and go to another one. So I told the security guard that my mom had come in with me by accident. I usually don't say mom otherwise, just because I like have a mom, and because this is the way we address Trisha has changed so recently that it feels strange to say mom.
I'm guessing your parents have seen the movie, maybe even multiple times. So can you tell me about their reactions to it?
Yeah, they first saw it before it was done, and they said, oh, you know, it's really, they were very supportive. So there's, oh, we love it. And then Trisha and my sister came to our premiere at Full Frame in April. And that's when it was just like, man, what a cool response. Like, the audience, we had a really long standing ovation, the longest that the people who were volunteering there, they were like, we've never seen this before. And then we answered all these questions. The audience was really enthusiastic. And pretty much immediately, Trisha was just like mugging for the audience and like dancing around and just loving the attention, you know. And it was empowering for my sister too, because there's a section in the film where a teacher comes up to her in high school and says, "I know what your dad's doing and I don't approve." And an audience member was like, "What would you want to say to that teacher now?" And she said, "You know, I'd like to tell him it's none of your damn business." And just to be able to take back that kind of this experience that she had, that was really empowering for her. And my mom's been able to come to, I'm trying to think, I think the first time my mom saw it in a theater was, oh yeah, Frameline in San Francisco. It's a huge LGBT festival. And it was in the Castro Theater, which is like a 800 person theater, beautiful historic theater, and we also got a long standing ovation. And my mom was kind of nervous walking up to the stage, and then as soon as somebody asked a question, she just grabbed the microphone from me and was like happily answering questions. And just, it was cool. I think for all of us, it's been like really affirming to have people say thank you, and to say like this film can save lives, because we're humanizing transgender people and their families. So it's been really empowering.
So this is your first feature film. So were there any surprises for you, like as a filmmaker, like things that just surprised you about the process?
Yeah, a couple things. I mean, one is that taking a break between cuts is really nice, and it's a really smart thing to do, because if you're just like barreling on running a marathon and you never stop for a minute and think about it and like watch things and just like walk away from it for a week or two, you might come away with something that's not as good as it could be. That happened to us. Mm-hmm. And so that's an experience that I'm never going to forget, and I'm always going to try to take a break before I finish something. And I think the other thing was, I don't know, before I made this, I thought like, oh, I don't know, you know, feature, it's like, you got to have this big story and got to make sure it's like the most amazing story ever. And then I realized like, you kind of just have to shoot and you'll find a story. Like if you're determined, you'll find a story. And it's really hard to make your first feature. I was very lucky because I partnered with Martha Shane, and she's already a really successful director. So she was my producer on this film, but just having her name behind us was really, it like got us a lot more grants and just helped a lot. So I think it's really important to try to partner with people somehow who can help you, or to like move your project along. And just the experience of working with her, she kind of kept us on pace too. Because I think for me, it was sort of like this nebulous thing, and I didn't ever know if I was going to finish it. And then once she came on, it was like, oh, we are in business and we have to keep moving. So I think just shooting and moving forward is really important.
And so your background is in science. And so you have a company that makes like scientific animated films. Yeah. And I was thinking about that. I was like, okay, your mother's a doctor, your father's an artist. Here you are making movies about science. Like, what a wonderful combination. So with that background, do you feel like you brought a scientific eye to the movie, or like any of that previous training to this film?
I mean, I definitely brought the technical training to this film. But the story was so different that, like, yeah, I couldn't be scientific about the story. I had to, I had to be able to step back and say, oh, you're right, we should lose this part, it's not important, or we should keep this part. But I didn't want to be scientific in this movie, because it's so personal. And so that was a different exercise for me. I've worked with a lot of other filmmakers who have done kind of personal films, so it wasn't completely foreign, but it was definitely a challenge. It was an exercise that I'd never worked that muscle myself before. Mm-hmm. But I loved it. And I mean, I think like my next film, I hope that it's sort of a conservation science movie, but it's going to be about people, you know, because people are fascinating, and what people do and how they feel it's just fascinating. So whatever I do, I hope that it's about people, you know, who are doing things that maybe have something to do with science, but you know.
That was going to be one of my next questions. Like, do you have a next project lined up that you're thinking about? So you can maybe tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, okay. So I have a series that I do with the New York Times OpDocs called Animated Life. And we have two more that we're getting published before the end of the year. They take about 8 months each. So we've actually been doubling up to get these two out before the end of the year for like award season and stuff. So it's been really time consuming. And so I haven't like started shooting another feature yet. I am going to Thailand in February to do a little bit of exploratory shooting. So we'll see how that goes, but I don't want to say what it's about yet.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Okay. Well, I think I've asked most of the questions that I wanted to ask, but like, is there anything else that you want to talk about for the film that you just want viewers to know?
I do have one thing. One thing that I really liked about my film is that I give Trisha a camera, and so when I was kind of thinking about the movie and pitching it and like writing all these grants, I was thinking about it as a conversation between Trisha and I, and I'm really pleased because I think that that's what came about, and it's a conversation, it's a visual conversation, like between my camera, and then Trisha has this little camera and she shoots stuff and kind of talks to the camera and talks to me, and also her paintings are this visual, you know, part of this conversation. And so I'm really I didn't want to just make a movie that like put a transgender person on display. I wanted it to be like a two-way mirror, two-way mm-hmm. conversation. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's an intimate movie because it's made by the daughter of a transgender person, not just like, I don't know, I meet filmmakers all the time who are making movies about transgender people, and I know that you can make a movie about a subject that you're not intimately connected to, but I just think that mine is like, it's more, I don't know, like I just think it's got a different lens, and so I hope that people take that away when they watch it.
I really like that idea of, yes, you're looking at Trish, but she's also looking back at you, looking back at us. So it is like much more of a two-way street. Yeah. I think that's a nice idea to end on. So thank you, Sharon, for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to the Missouri Review Sound Booth podcast. Music by Mark Catalano. Check us out online at MissouriReview.com, where you can subscribe to the magazine and enter our annual Miller Audio Prize in poetry, prose, audio documentary, and humor. Deadline March 1st, 2016. Thanks for listening, and check back next week for a new episode of the Missouri Review Sound Booth podcast.